Dalai Lama, and Archbishop Desmond Tutu, along with their collaborator, writer. I always want to call him another name, Douglas Abrams, Douglas Abrams. And I wanted to read something to you from the front cover, and I believe Douglas Abrams wrote this. He says, "By the end of the week, filled with laughter and punctuated with tears, these two global heroes had stared into the abyss and despair of our times and revealed how to live a life brimming with joy." So it's a beautiful book. If you didn't get a chance to read it, I would still recommend it. And as you know, if you've been here for a while, the two spiritual icons come up with eight what they call pillars of joy. There they are, together with Douglas Abrams. And the pillars of joy, there are four that they call pillars of the mind, and those are perspective, humility, humor, and acceptance. And then the final four they call qualities or pillars of the heart, and those are gratitude, forgiveness, compassion, which we talked about last week, and today we are going to talk about generosity. And actually, those last two pillars, compassion and generosity, are closely connected. The Dalai Lama says, "Generosity is the most natural outward expression of an inner attitude of compassion and loving kindness. When one desires to alleviate the suffering of others and to promote their well-being, then generosity," I'm changing the order here a little bit, "in thought, word, and action is really put into practice." And that is what generosity is. So last week, I invited us all to just open our hearts and set the intention to become more compassionate, right? Remember that at the end of the lesson? Okay, honesty time. The doors are closed. Nobody's going to judge anybody here. How many tried it? How many tried to be a little more compassionate? Good, good. Several of you did. And how did it work? Good. It's a practice, isn't it? It's not automatic. For me, during the week, it helped me to become a better watcher of my thoughts. And a couple times things flew out of my mouth and I said to myself, whoops, that's not compassionate. And so I tried to shove it back in, right? So if you didn't try it last week, I encourage you to continue trying it because it really is a good practice. And if you tried it, I bet you, like me, found that in being more compassionate, you automatically became more generous. And we say that a generous heart generates joy, not only for the person, but for everybody in the world. So Douglas Abrams actually begins the chapter by saying, "I think that almost all of us are surprised at how much our joy is enhanced when we make others happy." The Archbishop agrees. He says, "Yes, it truly is in giving that we receive. I hope people will realize that when we are closed in on ourselves, we tend to be miserable. When we grow in self-forgetfulness," I love their language here, "when we grow in self-forgetfulness," in other words, when we forget our little selves, our ego selves, "and consider others, we discover that we are absolutely filled with joy." So in the Sermon on the Plain, which is Luke's version of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, "Be merciful just as your Father is merciful." And then the rest of it is on the screen. "Give and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be into your lap, be put into your lap. For the measure you give will be the measure you get back." And I love the modern language in the Bible on this, in the Message, I mean, on this one. They say, "Give away your life, you'll find your life given back. But not merely given back with bonus and blessing." I love that. Given back with bonus and blessing. Giving, not getting, is the way. Generosity begets generosity. And the Archbishop explains the process as only he can. He says, "When you are generous, it seems like you're making space for more to be given to you. You're clearing out the space." He cites the example of the Dead Sea in the Middle East. It has no outlet. So the beautiful, clean, clear water that flows into it from all the rivers just lies there and becomes still and stagnant. And the arch, as he likes to be called, says, "It receives and it does not give." And we humans are much like that. We receive and so we must give. Generosity is the best way of becoming more and more and more joyful, he says. So in dictionary.com, generosity is defined as a readiness or liberality in giving, freedom from meanness or smallness of mind or character, largeness or fullness. And actually, this is so interesting, the origin of the word generosity is actually of noble birth. And aren't we all of noble birth? Yes, we are. So generosity expresses a fundamental aspect of our independence, our need for one another. And so probably it's because of that, it is prescribed in every world religion, called by different names, but it is a tenet of all the world religions, being generous. So according to Dr. Richard Davidson, neuroscientist and founder of the Center for Healthy Minds at the University of Wisconsin, I don't know how some people get all that on a card, do you? I don't know, that's a long title. I actually shortened it, but anyway, he's discovered that well-being, joyful living, is a condition that can be practiced and strengthened. It's something we naturally have inside, but we can just engage in acts that strengthen it and make it expand. He shares that there is now a plethora of research showing that when we engage in generous and altruistic behavior, we actually activate circuits in the brain that are key to fostering our well-being and our joy. Generosity is even associated with better health and longer life expectancy, believe it or not. So the good we do for others is also good for us in many, many ways. So here's a question. Are y'all ready? Here's a question from the Book of Joy, addressed in the Book of Joy. Here's the question. Can money buy happiness? What do you think? Yes or no? Most of you are shaking your heads no. Well, many lottery winners have discounted that premise. A lot of people win the lottery and their life goes south. I can't imagine that, but it happens. However, according to the research cited in the book, believe it or not, money can buy happiness if you spend it on other people or causes, okay? The Archbishop tells a story of a gentleman whose name is James Dory. He was the founder and director of the Center of Compassion at Stanford University, and he's also chairman of the Dalai Lama Foundation. Now, at one point in his life, Dr. Dory had become a multimillionaire from investments in medical technology companies. His net worth reached, are you ready for this, over $75 million. Yes, and at that time, he pledged stock worth $30 million to charity, a generous donation. But when the dot-com meltdown occurred in the early 2000s, he lost everything. In fact, he said he really owed several million dollars. Now, his lawyers advised him that there was a tiny little loophole in his pledge to the charities that would allow him to get out of his charitable commitments, but he refused to get out of it. These are his words. "One of the most persistent myths in our society is that money can make you happy. Growing up poor, I thought money would give me everything I did not have. I thought it would give me control, power, and love. But I had all the money I had ever dreamed of, and it did not make me happy. And guess what? When I lost it, many of my false friends disappeared. And at the moment," he says, "I realized that the only way money can bring happiness is to give it away." Well, sometimes it takes us a while to figure that out. I don't think I figured that out when I was young. Sunday school teacher, Mrs. Smith, who taught 10-year-olds, and she decided that she would really make it a point to teach her kids about compassion and generosity. So she did a study of children all over the world, and once the study was ended, she said to the kids, "All right, boys and girls, how many of you would give $1 million to feed the hungry children?" And they all raised their hands and clapped and went, "Yes, yes, yes, we would do that." And she said, "Oh, that's wonderful. How many of you would give $1,000? And she got the same response, stomping their feet and screaming, "Yes, yes, yes." And then she said, well, how many would give $100? Same response. And then she stopped and she looked into the eye of every single child in her class and she said, how many of you would give $1 to save the hungry children, to feed the hungry children? And everybody was doing the same thing, yelling and stomping and clapping and saying yes, except Harvey, who was sitting in the back of the room. And the teacher noticed he sort of put his hand on his pocket. And she said to him, well, Harvey, I don't understand. Could you explain to us you would give $1,000,000 and you would give $1,000 and you would give $100, but you wouldn't give $1? And he looked at her and goes, well, Mrs. Smith, the thing is, I have $1. So I think that shows us that sometimes generosity sounds better in theory than it does in practice, okay? Of course, generosity in the end is not about how much money we give. It's not just about how much money we give. It's also about what we give of other things, our time, our talents, our energy, our prayers. And in the happiness research, there's a lot of data that say joy is contingent on the importance of our having a purpose. We just read the purpose for our church, our mission statement, but people who have a personal mission for their lives have greater joy. The research shows those who have a personal mission, who feel needed and valued to others, have a 23% reduction in death rates. And also, one study showed that people with a strong sense of purpose were half as likely to develop Alzheimer's disease. So the research is pretty strong. And the two spiritual icons agree that compassion and generosity are not just lofty values, they are at the center of what it means to be human. They are at the center of our humanity. The Buddha said, a generous heart, kind speech, and a life of service and compassion are the things that renew humanity. And the Archbishop admits there are many, many ugly things, but also there are some incredibly beautiful things in our world. And he tells a story about the black townships in South Africa that are just squalor ridden in because of despair and disease, including HIV. Children are often orphaned, just abandoned on the streets. And in one township, he says, I met a mother who just couldn't stand this. So she went around the village collecting up all those abandoned children. She had nothing much in the way of resources. In fact, at one point, she had about 100 children living in a 3-room house. Can you imagine that? But as soon as she started doing this, help began to pour into her. People came forward to build a little dormitory for her where kids could all sleep. Others contributed food and supplies and lots of other needs, books. The woman became legendary, but she wasn't really driven by fame. She simply wanted to save the children. That was her personal mission. And this is, I think, a classic example of what Teddy Roosevelt said. We've looked at this quote before, I think. Do what you can with what you have where you are. Very important. The Archbishop says, we are fundamentally good. We are created for goodness. And when the opportunities come to us, we mostly respond with generosity. Well, obviously, those of you who have been here for a while know this is a classic unity principle number 2, which says we are spiritual beings created in God's image. The Spirit of God indwells us, lives in us. Therefore, we are inherently good. Well, at this point, the Dalai Lama, who has an art for this, asks a compelling question. He says, well, if we're so good, what is it about our modern life that destroys our compassion and generosity? Why aren't we seeing more of this in the world? And he says, this is his theory, we've been brought up to think that we have to live by the laws of the jungle. You know, eat or be eaten. We are so ruthless in our competition that stomach ulcers become status symbols. He says we work not only to supply the needs of our family, but we also work to try to outdo each other. When we turn away from our basic nature of goodness and generosity, we become dehumanized and debased. He quotes Martin Luther King Jr., who said, "We must learn to live together as brothers and sisters, or we will perish together as fools." The Dalai Lama's interpreter, who we really haven't talked about much, but he's been there the whole week too, he's written his own book, actually, on generosity, and he explains something important. He says, in Buddhist teachings, there he is, Jinpa is his name, in Buddhist teachings, there are three kinds of generosity. There, of course, is material giving, which we've already talked about. There's also, I love this, giving freedom from fear. Now, this can involve giving protection, as the mother did in the village. It can involve counseling. It can involve compassionate listening to one another and giving people solace and peace. And finally, there's spiritual giving. I've never really thought about this before, but there's spiritual giving, which they say means giving your wisdom, moral and ethical teaching, and helping people to be more self-sufficient and joyful. Here, Douglas Abrams interjects, this was, of course, the last one, spiritual giving, was, of course, what the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Tutu were giving all week long. And I would say they were giving all their lives long, too. They're good models of that. But sometimes, don't we all get into that? I get into this, that, oh gosh, but they're the Dalai Lama and the Archbishop. Who am I? I'm just one person. What can I possibly do? That mentality of thinking there's not enough that we can do. And the Dalai Lama says, and I love this quote, "If you think you are too small to make a difference, try sleeping with a mosquito." Okay. And I know the two is spelled wrong, but it's a good slide, so I used it anyway, okay? So it's true. You know, we can make a bigger difference than we think we can make. And the Dalai Lama says, the planet doesn't really need more successful people. The planet desperately needs more peacemakers, healers, restorers, storytellers, lovers of humanity, those who pray, I would add. It needs people simply to live well in compassion and generosity right where we are. So the Dalai Lama reminds us once again that none of us can survive on our own. We all need each other. Just think of this morning. Think of the clothes you put on that were made from somebody else. Think of the food that magically appears in your kitchen almost, that somebody grew or raised or whatever. I mean, we are completely interdependent. We live in a global society. And he admits that the problems of the world can loom large. Certainly they can. But it's important for all of us to remember that we are not alone. We have the presence of the divine within and with us all the time, and we have one another. He says, it takes time, but we are learning, we are growing, we are becoming the people we want to be. And here's something important. It helps no one, he says, if you sacrifice your joy because others are suffering. Sometimes we look at something awful going on in the world and then I feel guilty that I'm so joyful. And he said, no, that's not the right attitude at all. We people who care must be filled with joy so that others can recognize that helping others, being compassionate and generous are not burdens. They are a joy. Give the world your love, your service, your healing, but also give the world your joy. That's a great gift too. So Douglas Abrams writes, the Archbishop and the Dalai Lama are describing a special kind of generosity, the generosity of the spirit. And these are his words to describe them. They are big-hearted, magnanimous, tolerant, broad-minded, patient, forgiving, and kind. And he says, maybe this generosity of the spirit is the truest expression of spiritual development, of what the Archbishop says, it takes time to become. It doesn't happen overnight. But with generous hearts, we can take in the suffering of others and give them back our love and our joy. Again, a generous heart generates joy. In the words of Bob Hope, nothing like switching from the Dalai Lama to Bob Hope, is there? But in the words of Bob Hope, he says, if you haven't any charity in your heart, you have the worst kind of heart trouble. I love that quote. So finally, the two spiritual icons remind us that when we practice a generosity of spirit, whatever that looks like for you, we are in many ways practicing all the other pillars put together. In generosity, there is perspective, the perspective in which we see our oneness, our connection with all humankind. In generosity, there is humility that helps us realize our place in the world. There's a sense of humor. I love the humor that we have around here. There's a sense of humor and ability to laugh at ourselves so that we do not take ourselves too seriously. In generosity, there's acceptance. Anne did the talk on that, and she did a great job. There's an acceptance of all life, and we do not try to force life to be other than what it is at the moment. In generosity, this is an important one, we talked about a couple weeks ago, there is gratitude, the gratitude for all we have been given. And there is forgiveness of others and a release of what might have been. And when we view others with a deep compassion and a desire to help those in need, we truly are living in joy. And this comes from a generosity that they call the wise self, a generosity that helps us know in helping others, we are helping ourselves. So a generous heart does generate joy and is, according to the Dalai Lama, ultimately the way to discover your own joy and live a happy, peaceful life. And so it is. So let's just take a moment now. We're going to do a meditation today on the eight pillars. But before we do that, let's just take a moment to affirm the one great truth about our God. This affirmation is being affirmed in Unity churches all over the world this day, and it is printed in the bulletin for those of you who are here for the first time. It is that there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Would you say that with me, please? There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.